Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear my voice, you are exactly where you need to be. I am your host, Rick Hale. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Welcome. Karen, unfortunately, will not be joining us tonight as she has some family stuff to take care of, but we all wish her well, and she'll be back next week to join us, hopefully. So, before I introduce who we have coming on the show tonight, we're going to do a little bit of an editorial kind of thing. Now, I don't do this often because this is Karen's cup of tea, more of an editorial, but I feel a need that I need to comment on this. I have never made it any kind of big secret that I am and have always been a supporter and advocate for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. I'm all about, you know, as an American, we have that whole, you know, freedom of speech and, you know, movement and loving whoever the hell we want to love. But the reason that I bring this up tonight is it's not a political rant or anything of that nature, but a friend of the show and a researcher and investigator that I happen to know and respect very much was recently outed as being gay. And that's cool in and of itself and all that. Fine, whatever. That could possibly be an accidental thing. The only problem is that it became sinister. And by sinister, I mean that this individual is now being harassed by people for being gay. And I really got to thinking about that. We are in a field where we're supposed to be open-minded. Now, I understand the fact that that's about the supernatural, but let's face it, this is part of who we are as human beings, and it's part of the human condition. Life, death, rebirth, what have you. At no time is it ever acceptable to look at a person and say, because you're different, I hate you. And it's all part of this paranormal bullying thing that goes on right now. And I think it's something that needs to stop. And I support this individual that I speak of. And I think he's a good guy. And, you know, I don't have a problem with it. And I'm kind of hoping that nobody else does as well. So let's just keep it in mind for the future that there are many, many people in the field who are gay and who are lesbian. And they should be respected as human beings as well as researchers and investigators. So that's my rant for tonight. So joining us, we have two authors tonight, two excellent authors. First hour is going to be joined by Chad Shimke. Now, Chad is a fiction writer, but it's mostly a cult paranormal horror in its subject matter. He is the author of Picker and Pieces, which are two novels, and two short stories called Walker and Weirder. He's from the Bay Area out in San Francisco, so we're going to be talking to him a little bit tonight, and you know, we're going to find out what kind of ghosts and stuff like that they got going on out in the Bay Area, in San Francisco, as well as his books. And then joining us for our second hour is going to be author Kristen Ann. Now, if you haven't heard of Kristen Ann, she is the author of Exploring Sacred Spaces, A Vast Quest. In a couple weeks here, ladies and germs, we are going to be going through, you know, an alleged transition or, hey, you know, the end of the world, whatever. And I'm speaking of December 21st, 2012. So that's what we're going to be talking to Kristen about. She has written a huge book on the subject. I have not read it, but I'm pretty familiar with the subject matter anyways. So when we come back, we're going to take a quick break, and I hope nobody minds my little rant that I had earlier. I hope it wasn't seen as that. We're going to be joined by Chad Shimke, paranormal author, occult author, crime fiction author, great stuff. So stick around when we come back, and we'll have Chad Shimke. So hang out. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Knight Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com. Hi, everyone. It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ZTalkRadio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey, welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. I am your host, Rick. Thanks for sticking around if you are still in the chat room and at the other places where you could possibly listen to us. So tonight joining us as our first guest is going to be author Chad Shimke. Now, we're going to do a little something different. We usually don't have fiction authors on here, but this guy's work sounds pretty interesting. He is the author of two novels. It is Picker and Pieces, as well as two short stories, Walker and Weirder, which all of them could be found at Amazon.com. And we're going to be talking about his books as well as ghosts and stuff like that, because he does have an interest, ladies and gentlemen. He isn't just a fiction author. So, Chad Shimke, welcome to the Underground.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it. So, really excited to be here. Thanks a lot.
Oh, no problem. So, your novels. Okay, let's start with those, Picker and Pieces. Now, I was looking at your work on Amazon, and I love the cover of Picker, just like the dude holding a gun. He's just going to blow you away. But so basically all your novels, they have a, or and your short stories as well, they have a paranormal flair to them. Now I know that you and I, we were talking earlier in the week, and you did say that you are a fan of paranormal type stuff. So, you know, in just your novels and Picker and Pieces, what exactly is so occult or paranormal about them?
Well, let me take Picker to begin with. As I was growing up, I lived in New Mexico, and you know, it's really a place where sort of the past and the future really come together. And what I mean by that is there's some pretty cultural aspects that have been around, you know, as far as hundreds of years goes. There's a big Native American influence there, and there's also a pretty strong Spanish influence.
I'm sorry, pretty strong what influence?
Spanish.
Oh, Spanish. Oh, okay. I thought you said fetish. Yeah. I'm like, I thought you were talking about the Kachina dolls for a second there, but okay, please proceed.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, so then you got those influences of history and past, and then you've also got the influences of, you know, the future as far as what modern goes. In particular, grew up around the uranium boom was going on, and you know, I've always kind of had a balance of interest as far as science, culture, and really loving paranormal.
Sure.
So with Picker in particular, it came out of a very specific aspect of Pickersett, New Mexico, and it's a very specific aspect of the culture in New Mexico, as far as, in particular, the Acoma Pueblo Sky City, and I'm not sure how familiar you are with that. It's a really beautiful place. It's a settlement that's been there for hundreds and hundreds of years, and not to give away too much specifically what goes on in the story, but it relates to that as far as the ancestors and the Native Americans. So I wouldn't say it's a ghost story, but it's got definitely that kind of flavor to it. And then like you're saying with the cover, also very action and crime thrill at the same time, because the main character in the story is he's a gang leader, and he's involved in this incident, and you know, that's kind of where the cover, you know, I really like the cover, this graphic element of it's a guy holding a gun on the cover, as you said.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit about Picker in a nutshell.
I mean, I would think that, you know, a cover with some rather, you know, nefarious-looking dude pointing a gun at you just is a seller. It would be for me. You know, I like action-type stuff.
Oh, me too, yeah. And the new book I'm working on right now is very much an action crime drama as well. So, yeah, it's everything I love, sort of all rolled up into one.
Right. Right. Now, it's interesting that you talk about the Native American influence. You know, you talk about how you know, interest in culture and the science, and when it comes to a lot of the Native American influence. I myself am in large part Cherokee, although I really don't look like it. I take after my mom's Irish side. Thanks, Mom. But yeah, it seems to be extremely influential down there. And I always think that, I know when I was growing up, it was always, you know, ghost stories and monster stories and stuff like that that I used to hear from my grandmother. So what specifically is different about New Mexico? Now, that's where the Zuni, the Anasazi were originally from, correct?
Absolutely. And, you know, my understanding of it anyway, and I, you know, in specific, I grew up in northwestern New Mexico, in the area between Gallup and Albuquerque. And those, all cultures, I believe, are Anasazi, but specifically in Pickard, the one that I'm most familiar with is Acoma. And Acoma's known, there's several really great sort of creation myths and kind of fables that Pickard makes references to.
Okay.
They've also got really beautiful pottery. I've got a couple examples. It's very graphic. It's usually made with a white clay, so it's pretty different, I think, than what people think about as far as Native American pottery goes. So it's white, and then it's got really bold black kind of geometric lines, and they've usually got a brown or sort of rust color design as well.
Sure.
And then the other culture that's pretty predominant in that area is the Navajo culture, and I believe both of those are related to Anasazi. I believe so.
Right. Yeah, that's, you know, I've never really been one that believed that the Anasazi were taken up by space aliens or they themselves were space aliens. They were definitely a very advanced society, just in their pottery, their artwork, and, you know, their building in the site of rocks alone is just, it's remarkable, and it's very unique in this part of the world.
Well, right, and you probably have heard of Chaco Canyon, which is in that same area in northwestern New Mexico. Chaco, I believe, sort of predates both of them, but the Navajo and the Acoma are both related to the Chaco culture.
Okay.
And I was kind of keying on into one little aspect you're talking about of their... some of the references made to the possibility of like an ancient, alien or spiritual element coming out of the Acoma is one tradition they have specifically is the Kiva. And the Kiva is sort of this mound kind of building that's half underground and then sort of half above ground.
Right.
And that's one of the references. You know, Picker's not all kind of all about Native American, but it's got a good maybe third of it that is.
Yeah.
And particularly with the Kiva, very interesting because it goes back to some of those myths. I believe they called it maybe the ant people, but the original their people came out of the ground, and the Kiva makes a reference to that, that they sort of, and I believe it's all just the men that go in there, and they have some, of course, most people aren't privy to that or ever get to see it, but it's talked about a little bit in the literature that they go into this Kiva, and they kind of close the door, and then there's these mystical sort of ceremonies that go on in there. So it's a big part of their... you know, like their religious and their cultural beliefs that, you know, does tie back in some way to paranormal and this thought of, if not specifically, you know, kind of aliens, but definitely their creations and their beginnings.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to be like that guy with the funky hair on television, but it doesn't, you know, I'm not going to say it's aliens, but it's aliens.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, if nothing else. You know, it's sort of like, where did that come from? It's just very intriguing.
Sure. Yeah, and it's funny, too, because a lot of people, when they think that it's like with Native Americans or even with the Aboriginals of Australia, that all of this stuff they're just spiritual beings, and that's pretty much all they are. And, you know, they're dealing in, you know, in a spiritual dimension, but it's kind of funny because there does appear to be a difference between what is very natural and to what is very spiritual. And the way that the ant people, see, I'm working on a project right now, and the ant people actually are going to play a huge part in it. But the ant people do appear to be a very huge part of the culture. I mean, they said that they were culture bearers, more or less. Correct?
Well, definitely. And you see, you're mentioning two different continents that native people from Australia or to the Americas, Southwest. It's very interesting to me that there's these parallels that happen. I mean, even though the cultures are separated by literally continents and thousands and thousands of miles, it's sort of the interesting thing to me is what made them connected to where they have these similar fables, and that's another thing that's also very interesting to me.
Yeah, it's And a lot of people would suggest because of these similarities that it's not even so much aliens, but I actually sort of believe in this, that at one time there human beings were a little bit more advanced, and then something happened that just wiped all that clean. And I personally believe a little bit more of Graham Hancock than I do Giorgio or whatever his name, Tsoukalos. I have a tendency to more believe that, we should be proud of what we've created as humans rather than ascribing it to some people that come from thousands of light years away. So, there's one of your novellas that I wanted to talk about, Weirder. That one sounds really interesting to me, and it's definitely one that I'm going to read. But it's about a young guy that goes to work at a circus, and it's the boss is a transgender gentleman, correct?
Well, the story is, basically that's right, with a little bit of a change to it. The beginning of that story, the inspiration came to me. I really like my interests are kind of all over the map, but I really like The Elephant Man, and I really actually love this book. The title of it is Very Special People, and it's all about the sideshow freaks, kind of the days of P.T. Barnum and the Ringling Circus, and they have these traveling shows. And so the main character in Weirder is of course it's fiction, so it's not based on the most. It's a reference to the most famous bearded woman, who's Julia Pastrani, and. My book is a book of fiction, so it's not Julia, it's a character. But in the book, Julia has a carnival, and a young boy who has a talent in magic sort of finds his way in this carnival, and then the events of Weirder, the novelette, sort of unfold out of that. So it's blending kind of, this idea of people are different, people that are quote-unquote freaks, they've got this little community together, and then a little bit of kind of magic and where his magic sort of initial talent comes out of, and then to the conclusion of kind of what is the final result of this magic for him.
Sure. I remember when I was a kid, my dad used to talk about, my dad's in his mid-60s, and I remember him talking about, going to go see these, quote-unquote freak shows. And it's amazing that it's like putting your fellow man on display just to make money, and that they are, even when they are a little bit different. But, one of my favorite episodes of The X-Files is the one where they have to go down to Florida, and it's basically a town of people that are our sideshow and freak shows, and you really don't see that much anymore, correct?
Oh yeah, and I also have to think as well. This was likely, it wasn't likely. This is a time before television. I think that entertainment, probably people would maybe go to a movie every week. I think there was a lot more of these serials, kind of like Flash Gordon, Lone Ranger type of thing.
I love that stuff.
And they go to a movie, and it'd be a cartoon. It would be one Lone Ranger and one Flash Gordon, and then they'd see the movie. But other than that, they probably listen to radio shows, and that was kind of about it. So I think in the era before TV, and that's something that unfortunately seems to be going a little bit away as far as having all of these entertainment options. I mean, I know everything can kind of be on the internet now and YouTube, which is great, but some of those, I think there was some definitely charm and some definitely a flair to some of those entertainment offerings that is probably missing a little bit now. So I just think it's very interesting.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny too, because it's like, from what I understand, that burlesque shows are starting to come back quite a bit.
Oh,
and people are actually, people are going to clubs and they're paying money to see these burlesque shows. So it kind of makes me wonder how long it is before freak shows start coming back.
Well, yeah, there's a whole movement here in San Francisco going back to that burlesque as far as entertainment, vaudeville type of variety shows. So it is still there, definitely. I'm glad to see that some of those things of our culture are not being lost altogether, you know.
Yeah, I mean, some people, you know, they act like, well, you know, I'm really offended by that, you know, calling them freaks, but it's like, they wouldn't have agreed to be a part of that if they felt that they were being exploited. And I have no doubt that some were, but some of the more older and mature people who had been in the, you know, the entertainment field for a while, you know, took it with a grain of salt, I would imagine.
I guess that for me, writing a story with some characters that are at such a disadvantaged place as far as they're got whatever challenges and they're in their own little world of their circuit. So it's also a little bit of a way of me kind of championing for them, you know. And also this bearded lady is the main character. So wanting her to represent her as a strong, you know, she's different, she's quirky. And that's something I try to bring forth kind of in all my fiction. Really want, when I'm writing a story, to key into something that is, you know, everyday real life can be interesting, definitely, but I think kind of for a story, there needs to be that extra something special in it. So whenever I'm thinking of a story idea, I try to always pick up on that aspect. You know, what is really kind of different, what's unusual, what can I sort of play up that's got some flair and some style to it. So that's something I'm definitely thinking when I'm writing.
Now, you told me earlier in the week that you have a couple new projects that you're working on.
I do. Yeah, actually, I've got a new novel that is nearing the finish stages. I work with a writer's critique group here that I'm the organizer for, so we critique each other's work. Actually, my novel going to critique next week, and I'm hoping to get that sort of finalized and then sent off to the publisher for review, and hoping that they're going to accept that. And then after that, I've got this idea of we're talking about Flash Gordon Lone Ranger. So my idea is to do a set of serialized stories.
Okay.
And it'll also be very paranormal in nature. So in that series, it's going to focus on sort of communicating with spirit, Ouija board, tarot cards. It's got a fortune teller machine, so it's all sort of the things that end up, you know, being in my writing. These sort of elements of fantasy and of just kind of really wanting the reader on a sort of a wild ride.
Right. So this new novel that you got coming out, you're kind of vague a little bit on it, you know, talking about, of course, the critiquing, but, you know, can you give our listeners maybe a little bit of a, you know, a look into what it's about? Kind of a preview?
Oh, definitely. This is, tentative title is Secret, and some of the themes of the novel involves an identical twin, so it's involving some cases of mistaken identity. It's got a paranormal element in it, which I don't want to say too much about. The overarching sort of device and storyline of the novel, similar to Picker, is it is a crime thriller. So okay. It follows the main character as its female main character in this case. She's navigating all of these different elements of the thriller and sort of, kind of chase setback, and then she finds out some clues, and then, so it should be very interesting. It's my favorite I've worked on so far, so I'm really, really pleased with how it's shaping up. And elements of thriller, elements of crime, and a very strong paranormal element to it as well.
Right. So what exactly is it about the paranormal that you find so interesting? Did you have some kind of experience at one time that sort of opened up your mind? It was like, wow, there's more to life than, just looking at myself in the mirror in this flesh and blood bag. Did you, experience anything?
Growing up in New Mexico had a large part in that. It's a little bit hard to pin down, though. My reading interest very young, we're always paranormal, and I sort of don't know, is that just because of what I was interested in, or was it where I was growing up, my surroundings? I'm not exactly sure, but very keen on from very, very young. I can remember the first books really liking sort of vampire stories, liking comics. I got a few in my collection, actually, sort of, 80s comics from Tales of the Supernatural and
See,
comics
that's,
about vampires.
Yeah, that's my particular nerdiness right there. I love 70s and early 80s comic books. And it's like I'm trying to rebuild my collection now, and and I'll be damned if it's not almost practically impossible to find these comic books. But I have found a place in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin that does have a large selection, but just the idea of the money that's involved so I could, get these comic books back. But I definitely hear you on that.
Yeah, I was lucky enough, there was a comic store that was going out of business, so I got I don't have that many. I have maybe 20 or something. But it sort of takes me back to that place of being really interested in all that stuff, interested in Stephen King, the zombie movies, the vampire movies, and also, like I was saying, living in New Mexico, all of that is sort of, just part of the roadmap there. Talking about the ancient cultures, and then also people think about UFOs a lot. I mean, those are all the things that were, very, very interesting to me as then and, also now, obviously.
Right. Now, living in a town like San Francisco, from what I understand, San Francisco has quite a bit of ghosts because it has a very, dodgy history to it.
Oh, yeah.
Have you yourself been on, a ghost hunt at all?
No, I haven't, but I sort of feel like just even walking down the street, you walk down the street here, and, on either side, you're surrounded by buildings that are 100-plus years old,
Right.
So, the way I like to think of it in San Francisco is, as you're walking down the street, I mean, this is a bit of an overstatement, but kind of every window you look in, there's a ghost, literally or imaginatively or figuratively, whatever.
Yeah.
And people don't know some of these things, but for example, a lot of the parks were cemeteries at one previous time. The cemeteries here were all actually dug up, and most of them were relocated to Colma, which is the bordering city, San Mateo County, right over the county line. As you go through a lot of the landmarks here in San Francisco, you see that a lot, and so I haven't specifically been on a ghost hunt, but these are the things that, people see and people talk about, a lot of these famous buildings and a lot of these famous ghost stories. And I think a little bit also maybe at what you're kind of hitting at first is the city's history as far as being a port city and kind of the famous Barbary Coast, which was in the gold rush days, a very rough red light district, a lot of kind of bad, seedy situations going down.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of the style and the flair as where the city's coming from, it kind of all goes back to that, you know, and today is not, you know, in 2012, we're not obviously in Wild West days anymore.
Right.
That is definitely where the history is coming from. And that's, you know, one of the things I really like about the city is, there are those stories around, and that's also something that's very inspirational as a writer.
Yeah.
So, well, a lot of material to work with.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's not called the Paris of the West for nothing. Yeah, you know, it's like we had that same thing here in Chicago. Basically, our history in our city is, well, it's built on bullets, booze, and babes, as I like to say. So we you know, I'm pretty familiar with what it is, you know, to live in a city that has a seedy side to it. But you know, with San Francisco. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. The furthest west I've ever been is Dubuque, Iowa. And I'm not, you know, obviously I wasn't very impressed with that. But my wife is, or my wife's parents, her dad was stationed in San Francisco right before he went into Vietnam. And, you know, even back then they used to hear things about Alcatraz. Now, this was back when there were still... I think that they still had a few guys left in the prison, but you hear definitely a lot of ghost stories that come out of Alcatraz.
Absolutely, yeah. There's of course entire sort of movies and sort of books, you know, based on Alcatraz.
Mm-hmm.
But it talks about a lot as far as this, you know. So maybe for somebody who's a little bit less familiar with it, Alcatraz is a former prison. It
mm-hmm.
is on actually an island. It's sort of, they call it a rock, and it is sort of just this big rock that sticks
yeah.
out in the middle of the bay. It is not a prison now, but it was at some point. It is sort of crumbling as you see it. It's sort of crumbling concrete. It's rusted bars.
Right.
It hasn't been in use in many, many years. So... even as you're approaching it from, if you're going there on a ferry or on a tour, the ferries cross from San Francisco to Sausalito. So even if you're on the ferry, you'll go right by it. Or
right.
if you reserve yourself a tour, you can get on a boat at Fisherman's Wharf and it'll take you right over there.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're even approaching Alcatraz, what you see is a very creepy, just even the vibe and the energy to it is spooky, you know.
Right.
We're talking broad daylight here, you know. This, I'm sure at night, I've never been there at night, but I'm sure it would be a lot more spooky.
Yeah.
But anyway, going to Alcatraz, and as you go through on a tour, say for example, you see the cells, and again, it's really corroded, it's really rusted. I can't say it specifically, you know, seeing a ghost there myself, but some of the stories that people talk about is hearing things like footsteps,
right.
hearing like a door slam, cell doors. Very common, one of the apparitions that's reported there is that there's a feeling of cold, like a cold spot or a cold spell.
Sure.
And then hearing laughing or a noise that goes along with it, and seeing red, like red eyes, you know, sort of in the darkness. So I you know, wish I would have been able to see some of myself, but that's one of the stories you hear about as far as Alcatraz goes. Yeah, and many, many hundreds of prisoners obviously went through the place. Not a prison anymore, but is definitely it's a sight worth seeing, definitely.
Yeah, it definitely appears to be one of those tourist attractions. And, you know, it's funny, too, because a lot of people, they always talk about, well, we're going to Waverly Hills, we're going to Moundsville Prison. If I'm going to go to some place, it's going to be The Rock. That is
right.
where I want to tour. Take even a nighttime tour, you know, maybe, you know, bring one of my friends with me who is a psychic medium and just sort of, like, take a walk through and, see if we can communicate, because what I understand that one of our famous Chicagoans, Al Capone, was in there for a time, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right. Yeah, I do believe I've heard that. Yeah, and sort of besides that, just to see the beauty, you know, there's this sweeping bay and the Oakland Hills and the Marin Hills on the other side, and then from the side of Alcatraz, you could see the whole Golden Gate Bridge that's, you know, crossing the bay. So, you know, it's a beauty, but also those kind of spooky and interesting elements you're talking about.
Right. So what are some of the other areas in San Francisco? I mean, obviously, our listeners, you know, we like to educate them on haunted locations because, you know, hey, some people, they want to go on a trip and they want to go to a place that where they're going to be spooked. Besides Alcatraz, what are some of the other famous haunts that you have in San Francisco?
I really like the Mission Dolores, and San Francisco was founded as a mission city. Mm-hmm. And that is actually sort of the birthplace. There are only one and a handful of cemeteries in San Francisco, and Mission Dolores is actually one of them. It's quite small. It's not big at all. It's got the beautiful, sort of the more modern church that's been established there, but it's also got the original Mission Church. It's white, white adobe, you call it.
Okay.
And then the cemetery adjoins the Mission Church, and then the new kind of cathedral to the side. It's an interesting place as far as I think paranormal goes, and also history. There's some exhibits that go along with it, so you can learn a little bit about San Francisco history. And it's in the center of town, and you can get to different locations you want to see. You know, besides that, there's a lot of really good places to. There's a lot of excellent restaurants here, and there's a lot of other places you can go for recreation. So that's one of the ones I definitely like as well, is the Mission Dolores.
Yeah. What about the Haight Ashbury? I have actually heard a very obscure story of a kind of a hippie girl. You know, spirit of a hippie girl that walks around that general area asking for money. Have you heard of anything like that?
Well, there is a, you know, a living life person doing that at this very moment. But not that particular story. No, I hadn't heard that. No, but there are it's a great neighborhood. Yeah, there's a lot to do there also. But I have not heard that particular story. No.
Yeah, you know, it's weird because you hear these stories, and I will say this, I'm not a skeptic, I'm a believer, but I'm a believer that hasn't turned their brain off. And you hear a lot of these stories about that, and it's like, yeah, well, okay, I haven't really experienced it for myself, but if you say that you saw a hippie chick that just sort of disappeared before your eyes asking for, you know, a couple of dimes, well, you know, hey, that was yours. That was your experience, and maybe it was meant for you and you alone.
Right.
So with you know, with your writing, you said that you know use San Francisco as kind of inspiration, and I've heard that about San Francisco before, that San Francisco is just, it's a very beautiful, very liberal city. Is that correct?
Yeah, I feel like I've lived a full life, you know, so it's given a lot of material and a lot of fuel to just be able to take my writing in different directions. Yeah, and just, you know, meeting a lot of people and being in a lot of places, because you sort of need both, you know, you need the character in the story and then sort of what's going to happen in the story. But they're also going to exist in a world that you have to paint with words, you know. So,
sure.
Fortunate in that aspect as far as having a lot of good material to work with. Absolutely. More than I'll probably ever be able to pull off in a lifetime, you know. So
right.
Luckily that's the case, because then I can kind of hopefully pick and choose what's best and sort of capitalize on that, you know.
Yeah, have you thought about doing, or have you done any nonfiction work?
I have thought about it, absolutely. I would really like to do a writing reference book, so to help writers as far as how to pull an outline together, how to do a draft, how to do some promotion, how to do some editing. So if I could ever be able to take some time to do that, I would really like to, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a, I myself as a writer, and I'll be honest with you, I'm not really a fiction reader. I'm more of a nonfiction with pretty much everything, not just in my own research as a psychical or paranormal researcher, but just with anything, you know, with history. But, you know, definitely your books and your short stories are, you know, Picker Pieces and Walker and Weirder are definitely something that I'm going to that I want to check out.
Great. That's great.
So, you know, Chad, if you want to, you know, pimp yourself at all on the show, you know, any kind of, you know, websites, your books, where you can find your books, you know, all that kind of thing, you know, give us, can you give our listeners a lowdown?
Yeah, I'd love to. Just to give a kind of a one-sentence summary on each book,
sure.
I've got two novels, and Picker, as we were talking about, is a crime drama. It's set in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. Looking for a crime thriller with action, with the myth and mystery of a miracle in New Mexico, Picker's a book for you.
Okay.
Pieces is another novel, and Pieces is set in San Francisco with San Francisco characters. It's paranormal. It's dealing with witches and mystery and suspense.
Okay.
So that's a book for you if you're interested in that. Two other works are quite a bit shorter, so they're novelettes. They're a little bit longer than a short story. Walker is science fiction, paranormal as well, and it's dealing with vampires, aliens, and human hybrids.
Okay.
And then Weirder is, we're also talking about that a little bit. That's a fantasy horror, and the main character in that is a bearded lady and she's a traveling carnival.
Right.
It's about the magic and the horror that unfolds out of that. And so that's two novelettes. I'd like to invite you to my blog. That's chadshemke.blogspot.com.
Okay.
I offer updated content all the time, usually a couple times a week. And you could learn about paranormal, learn about crime dramas. I've got some free content on there as well. So that's
okay.
My blog. Take a look at that. I offer a free ebook on my Goodreads page, and then if you could lend a hand as far as buying my books, they're all available on Amazon.com, and that web link for that is Amazon.com/author/Chad Shemke, and I'll spell that just because Shemke is not a common name like Smith or Jones, so it is a little bit different to spell.
Sure.
So Chad Shemke, that's Chadshemke.
Outstanding. All right. Well, thank you so much, Chad, for joining us tonight. It's been a fascinating conversation. You know, it's not often that we have fiction writers on, but, you know, definitely one of the more interesting ones at that. So, you know, Chad, I just want to say thank you for being on Paranormal Underground tonight. And hopefully maybe you can come back and visit us again sometime.
I'd love to. It's been a blast. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, no problem, man. It was like you said, it was a blast. So, all right, Chad, thank you. And, you know, definitely be telling people to read your books. And, you know, hopefully all of our listeners tonight had got a look into who and what Chad Shemke is all about.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
No problem. Have a good night.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
So that was, you know, again, that was Chad Shemke, the author of Picker Pieces, Walker and Weirder. Walker and Weirder being novelettes, Picker and Pieces being novels. You know, we don't really have fiction authors on here too much, but, you know, the subject matter, I would say, would fall into what, you know, our listeners and you know, even I myself would be interested in. So it was good to have him on tonight and, you know, talk about his work. What we're going to do is we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to author Kristen Ann. She's the author of Exploring Sacred Spaces, A Vast Quest, and this is a very timely talk we're going to be having for the next hour, because in 2 weeks, ladies and gentlemen, it's going to all be over on December 21st, 2012. So, you know, this is Paranormal Underground Radio on ztalkradio.com. I am your host, and what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, so stick around. When we come back, we're going to be talking 2012 and beyond with author Kristen Ann. Hang out.
If you are a small business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com, a proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.
On the go and missing another one of your favorite Z-Talk shows? Now you don't have to. Simply go to the Google Play Store on your Android phone and download the Z-Talk Radio app. The best part is, it's absolutely free. That's Z-Talk Radio, only found in your Google Play Store on your Android phone. Download it today.
In her riveting novel, Breaking the Beyond, writer Kim Casey brings to life a supernatural tale filled with mystery, humor, and intrigue. Kim's suspenseful story focuses on Risa, a compassionate social worker who assists Owen, a young psychiatric patient. Is a 300-year-old entity speaking through Owen, or does he simply possess multiple personalities? Visit aninpublishing.ca to order your copy of Breaking the Beyond. That's A-H-N-E-E-N. Publishing.ca.
First there came radio, and it was good. Then it got bad. Then there came satellite radio, and it was okay. Then it got too expensive and kind of sucked. Now there is something new, something better, something free. Stitcher Radio for the iPhone and BlackBerry. With Stitcher, you can hear all the shows and podcasts you can imagine, rate them, and build your own station. No downloading, no syncing, no problem. Just pick a station to get started, like American News and Politics. Now, look at the shows you have to pick from, pick one, and start listening. Like it, make a favorite, and start your own station. Don't like it? Thumb it down and say bye-bye to shows like it. Or thumb it up to find more like it. Plus, you can search and find your favorite podcasts. We have over 1,000 shows to pick from. Stitcher Radio, the natural evolution in audio listening. And it's free.
Your assignment is to listen to The Buzz on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com. This message will self-destruct.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for sticking around at Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. For the first hour or so of the show, we were speaking with Chad Shimke, fiction author of Picker Pieces, Walker and Weirder. You can find those at Amazon.com. I suggest that, you know, if you're looking for some good paranormal or occult or crime fiction, all those things rolled into one, I would suggest Chad Shimke. So, but now joining us, we're going to switch gears a little bit. And we welcome to the show for this hour, Kristen Ann. Now, Kristen Ann is the author of Exploring Sacred Spaces, A Vast Quest. And I could see how that would be a vast quest. Basically, it would appear that Exploring Sacred Spaces, A Vast Quest is all about what is coming up here in approximately 2 weeks. December 21st, 2012. So, Chris and Anna, I'd like to say welcome to the Underground.
Thanks very much.
You're quite welcome. Now, what really interests me about what I was reading at your website is that you first came across this teaching, if I'm not mistaken, at the Waldorf Training Institute. Now, it's in Detroit, and that was started, or rather, the main influence on that is Rudolf Steiner, correct?
Right. Rudolf Steiner. And Rudolf Steiner was an amazing clairvoyant who actually died in 1925. But he was way ahead of his time. And I always felt that he came at that point in time, just before Hitler, to, you know, bring some awakening and awareness in advance of all that darkness that was coming in.
Right.
But our classes were just amazing. He taught amazing things about the different levels of existence.
Sure.
He could see the past and the future. He could see auras. For example, one of our science classes was the study of elemental beings.
Okay.
You know, he could see other dimensions. And one of the things that was so interesting, and one of the reasons I wrote the book, was his views of the future and what is coming.
Right.
And if your listeners go to my site, exploringsacredspace.com, and up in the top left, there's a link to the chapters in the book.
Okay.
If you click on chapter 2 and scroll down, you'll see this diagram. It's a Wheel of Ages. It was first drawn up by Tibetan and Hindu seers.
Okay.
Long ago, and it lasts 25,920 years.
Okay.
What's intriguing about this is astronomers and scientists have found that there is that same cycle. They just call it, have rounded it off to 26,000 years.
Okay.
But it is a cycle where, you know, different cataclysms have happened.
Sure.
My professor showed us this wheel and said that at either end of the wheel, roughly 13,000 years apart, all throughout history, a cataclysm has happened.
That's what I was going to ask you. What exactly are the cataclysms?
Okay. We are now approaching that time again. I am not saying that it's going to happen on December 21st. I am expecting that something will happen on December 21st, but whether it'll be in 2013, I don't know. No one knows the exact day.
Right.
But what I do know is that a major transition is coming.
Okay.
All throughout the past, these have happened roughly every 13,000 years when, you know, a certain alignment of planets has happened. It has triggered a cataclysm. And I was fascinated by this, and I raised my hand, and I asked, what was it that happened 13,000 years ago?
Right.
And he said it was the Great Flood.
And okay.
The fascinating part to me was that the Great Flood was the story of the inundation of Atlantis.
Okay.
And he said that the figure that we've come to know as Noah was actually an Atlantean.
I'm sorry, it was actually who?
An Atlantean. It was actually from Atlantis.
Okay.
All ancient civilizations have recorded the flood. Mm-hmm. But he said that the most accurate one was the Babylonian account of Gilgamesh.
Right.
So this was really fascinating. And he said that in our lifetimes, there will be another shift-type thing. Only the interesting thing is that many different people that I have run into, sources with in-depth information, have said that it's going to be different this time. And
yeah, there seems to be a lot of uncertainty. I've heard everything from the absurdity of a zombie apocalypse, an alien invasion, all the way up to a very spiritual, uplifting event that changes mankind in a very fundamental way. With you, what are your theories concerning this? I mean, do we have to worry about, zombies eating our brains or something else?
No, definitely not.
Oh, thank God, because I hate zombies. They scare the heck out of me. But.
Okay, now what I'm going to say will probably sound very a combination of sci-fi and, wishful fantasy thinking.
Okay.
But we are living in extraordinary times. And for some reason or other, extraordinary people have crossed paths. I have crossed paths with extraordinary people and circumstances, experiences. And
now,
I've written them all in my book.
Mm-hmm.
What did you start to say?
Oh, I'm sorry. What I was going to say is, are these the masters that you speak of? And
okay.
And who exactly are the masters? I have heard of ascended masters, of course, Saint Germain being one of them.
Right, right.
Who are these people?
Okay. One of the other things that my professor had told us, now this was back when I was 19, it was in the mid-70s.
Mm-hmm.
And 1920, he said that for each age, if you look at that wheel, that 25,920-year wheel, it is divided on the inner rim, it's divided into 12 sections, given the names of the zodiac.
Okay.
On the outer rim of the wheel are the ancient way that the Hindu and Tibetans divided it into eight, what they called yugas, and a yuga is an age. Anyway, if you go by the 12, each one lasts 2,160 years.
Okay.
The whole duration of 25,920 years is called a Platonic year.
Okay.
But what he explained was, for each of these 2,160-year year terms, a master has always come to usher in that new age. And back, ushering in the age of Aries, Moses came, and during that time, and there's a picture in my book, and you can see all the pictures, by clicking on chapters.
Mm-hmm.
There is an avenue of ram's-headed sphinxes because people were aware of the ages and the emblems that went for each age.
Right.
And so that ram's head was ushering in that age of Aries. Roughly 2,000 years later, Jesus came to usher in the age of Pisces, and the fish became his emblem. Well, my professor said that there will be a master coming to usher in this new age of Aquarius. The interesting thing he said was that because of the difficulties of our time and what lies in our future, 42 other masters also made the sacrifice to come and help with whatever it is that is coming.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the past, most of humanity has died during these cataclysms.
Okay.
And a few remaining would have to start over. Technologies would be lost and histories would be lost. And all would be left, all that would be left would be legends, as in the legend of Atlantis and Lemuria before that. But this time is going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
It is very rare and may have never happened on Earth before that so many masters are living among us on the planet at one time. They are, most of them are here now, incognito.
I mean,
some of us may have even met them. Like I said, this will sound very sci-fi and unreal, but we are living in extraordinary times. And we don't know exactly what is going to take place. But I met a man who wrote a book called Extraordinary Times, Extraordinary Beings,
okay.
Experiences of an American Diplomat with Maitreya and Masters of Wisdom. Well, one of the things that my professor had said back in the mid-70s was that the ancient soul name for Christ, the being who came into the man Jesus for the last 3 years of his life when he became Christ,
mm-hmm.
his ancient soul name is Maitreya, and that this is the great being who is coming to usher in Aquarius.
Now, it's interesting that you say that because I'm a Buddhist, and I'm a Pure Land Buddhist, and in Buddhism, there is a belief that this Maitreya is the king that will come and will rein in, basically, humankind and teach us the true Dharma. Is this the same person?
The same great being who came into Buddha, which is why Buddha is called Maitreya Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
will be coming and is living among us now. And there will be a day of declaration when he comes out and the masters, maybe also the others, come out and announce who they are.
What it's okay. Now, we've had a lot of, you know, doomsday prophecies, obviously, over the years. I mean, the most recent one was a preacher, and it was a huge embarrassment for him and his church. He came out and said that, you know, the rapture was coming. Is there anything like that where people who have made the transition or don't make the transition are removed?
Okay. The whole thing is very complicated.
Okay.
Complicated and confusing, maybe, but that is why I wrote this book. There are so many fascinating and intriguing aspects to this. And one of the things, I met some of the original remote viewers.
Okay.
And remote viewing is the military form of training for clairvoyance.
Right. I think that was Project Stargate that we did back in the 70s or 80s, yeah.
Right. I met some of the original Project, the Stargate people.
Mm-hmm.
And they have done viewings of the future,
okay.
both them and also from the others that I've met, and it's detailed in the book. There will actually be a split in realities.
Okay.
Some of us will be going to a what they've called in the Bible a new earth, to a finer dimension. There will be a split in realities. Those who are basically not ready, who are maybe more negative or hold more negativity, they will be, to put it nicely, given the opportunity to continue their evolving, their evolution in the material physical plane and they will stay with the old earth. And it may look like devastation here, mm-hmm. but the rest of us will be, what has been described as the rapture,
mm-hmm.
will go to a different, this shift, the remarkable thing about this shift is it's going to be interdimensional for the okay. rest of us. We will be going into crossing the dimension of time, going into the future as we know it as time now,
mm-hmm.
and also into a finer dimension where our physical bodies will actually be less physical.
Okay.
And, I mean, to the diehard scientists and physical people who want proof, this may sound ridiculous, but from all that I have found out through my research and meeting these people with in-depth knowledge, this is what's going to happen. There will be a split in realities.
Mm-hmm.
Some will remain. As I see it, the whole New Age movement of raising awareness mm-hmm. and, you know, all these books may have been either written or inspired by some of these masters
sure.
incognito, you know.
Now,
getting us ready for this transition so that as many people as possible will be in the place of being aware enough to be able to go to the next level.
Right. Now, it's really interesting because, you know, I've been told by a couple of my friends who are psychics that I'm one of those people that's going to make that transition. Now, whether or not that's true, I don't know, but I do find it interesting.
I'm sure.
Because there are symptoms makes it sound like an illness, but there are symptoms that people are said to experience that are making this transition from this dimension to a finer dimension, or will make that transition. What are some of those symptoms? I mean, what is it that, you know, a normal everyday dude like myself would have to look for?
Oh, okay. Symptoms of what's coming and when the transition is coming, you mean?
Correct. Or, you know, like the speeding up of time.
Right. Time is speeding up. I mean, not that I'm a religious fanatic or a super religious person. I've always been a seeker mm-hmm. of, you know, finding out the truth at its deepest levels. But Jesus himself said that were it not for time being speeded up, none of us would remain alive. Time has been speeded up. There has been so much going on. One of the things that my professor explained, this was really interesting. He explained that we live in a multidimensional universe.
Okay.
There are many dimensions. And he said that every planet and moon in our solar system, and I expect throughout the cosmos, throughout the multi-universes, mm-hmm. has life on different dimensions.
Okay.
Is teeming with life and is lush on different dimensions. And he explained that on our sun, the sun of our solar system, the central sun of our galaxy and the sun of our solar system is where the hierarchy live on a different dimension.
Okay.
And he explained that because of what's coming, and because of the time being speeded up and everything, that energy would have to be, the hierarchy would be streaming energy from the sun to the earth just to keep the planet together
okay.
long enough to meet this point of destiny. This major transition is a point of destiny.
Okay.
So whenever I see solar flares happening, you know, I have to wonder what's going on another dimension. There's so much going on right now. And he said that this energy streaming toward Earth would cause different symptoms in people, speaking
okay.
of symptoms. Some of us feel it by feeling nervous. Some of us feel starving. Some of my really sensitive, intuitive friends have just been starving more than usual.
Mm-hmm.
But he also said that there would be a segment of society who would not be able to handle this energy. And he said that behaviors would become more and more erratic among certain people. And we've certainly seen that, you know, yes, with the mass shootings and all that.
Yes.
So it's very interesting what's happening, what's been happening. We don't know exactly what it's going to look like when this transition takes place, or if we will, you know, be taken in what has been described as the rapture,
okay,
before the transition actually occurs. But I, in my book, I have given indications and even how to prepare.
Okay. And how are we to prepare for such a thing?
Okay. One thing that he did state was that there will be 3 days of darkness.
Okay.
Now, here again, we don't know if we are going to be here on the planet for those 3 days of darkness. So we may have nothing to worry about. But, I mean, we may be sort of, in quotes, taken before that.
Okay.
I mean, that's a good possibility. But just in case, he said to stay inside for those 3 days. So have it already planned whose house you're going to be in. I mean, be with friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
But he said that it would be very important to have all the window, the curtains closed. And not
okay,
just sheer curtains, but, you know, sort of opaque curtains. For some reason, now, if it is a time shift, there may be some weird electromagnetic things happening.
Mm-hmm.
And what it reminds me of is Lot's wife, who looked and was disintegrated into a pillar of salt. I mean, I don't know exactly why this is, why it's important to have the curtains closed, but Druzler Melchizedek said the same thing. In fact, he even said to use wide tape, like painter's tape, the wide kind,
okay,
around the edges of the curtains, and even around doors that have cracks that let light in.
Okay.
And have water and food. There will be no electricity or communication with the outside world. But one thing that my professor had said was, it's really important to just be happy, to treat it as one adventure, like a big camp out or something. One adventure where everything will be changed when this is done.
So basically, when
for the better,
right? So after those 3 days, when, you know, we pull the tape down and open the blinds, and will we be walking out into a different world?
I think so. I think so. But here again, this is where I kind of feel that we may be taken before that,
okay,
before that even happens.
See, now, it's really,
if we're here, we're, you know, have candles, flashlights. And
right,
one thing that he said was to just sing and be happy and tell stories. No matter if you hear the wind howling or whatever, don't be afraid. Because that being afraid, you know, changes your energy.
Yeah, fear is definitely a mind killer. But you talk about this thing with being taken. Now, one of the things that I read at your website that I found very interesting and can sort of be backed up by science is, you say that there are massive spacecraft that are hanging out in the rings of Saturn. Now, I know that NASA has said that there are some rather large anomalies that are around,
exactly,
Saturn.
All they will say is, in quotes, anomalies. But write this down. I recently read a book called Ringmakers of Saturn.
Okay,
you can call the library. It may be out of print, and meaning very expensive. But
yeah.
Call your library. The libraries have a program called Interlibrary Loan.
Yeah.
I had them get that book for me from a different library across the country. Mm-hmm. And Bergren, I think was his name, who wrote the book in the 80s. Unfortunately, it was a time when we didn't have the best photography, but throughout the book are photographs in detail, close-ups of the rings of Saturn, mm-hmm. showing spacecraft. It's really, really fascinating. We can't go into all these details in 45 minutes, but
In
the book, I explain all these details. In fact, there are, besides the beings known as masters in the hierarchy, there are different types of beings who are going to be playing into this major transition.
Right.
And they are what we know of as extraterrestrials.
Okay.
And in 1977, in New Mexico, I read books by Dan Fry, and then things fell into place as they always have in my life. Coincidences just fall into place phenomenally.
Right.
Where I met Dan Fry, and I knew him as a friend for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan was one of the major contactees in the 50s. He met aliens and actually helped the first ones to come down and live as humans on Earth. They mm-hmm. had explained to him that there was something drastic happening in our future that they needed to be here for to help out with. And Dan got the first ones' false IDs and jobs. He taught those first ones, what it was like to be human. He would
right.
tell me funny stories of what it was like teaching an advanced alien how to drive, a car, which must have seemed like a Neanderthal thing to them when they,
sure.
they wanted to reach for a lever to hover over any obstacle or stop lights or anything.
Right.
But Dan shared the most fascinating stories of things the aliens had told him.
Okay.
And then I actually met an alien friend of his. And, all of this, pretty much, all these different sources that I have met have pretty much dovetailed and said the same thing. That mm-hmm. something major will be happening. But we're not to be afraid, and that is why I wrote the book, to explain all these details so that, because people have a right to know what's coming.
Sure.
And also, because this knowledge, knowledge obliterates fear so
right.
that people won't be afraid and they'll know what's coming and
no.
why.
Now, are there any indicators to know who these people are? Obviously, I'm thinking it's probably not like the Men in Black, where giant insects invade human bodies and use their bodies as suits. Is there any way and any indicators to know who these beings are?
No, there isn't. Not unless you can see auras.
Okay.
The one that I met. His aura was very, very interesting.
Okay.
What I saw, and this may have just been the way that it appears to a sensitive human being, what I saw around him was a black void. And it baffled me because there was no negativity, and yet there was this black void around him.
Mm-hmm.
Like the black void of space. It was very interesting. I explain it in detail, the circumstances of how I met him. Dan was sponsoring this healer to come to town for 3 days. He was giving a 3-day series of healings. And I just intuitively, I have a little bit of clairvoyance myself, and I intuitively knew that this man was not from Earth. So even though it was very expensive, I signed up out of curiosity.
Okay.
And I also saw things like that his real hand was more like claws, that from his forearm down, it had been altered to look human, and also his face had been altered to look human. But other than that, you know, there are really no indicators. Okay. I have read and heard from people who've met them that there is something different in their eyes, but they would never go into detail, you know, what that is, because they didn't want you to be staring into people's eyes and picking out who is not from Earth and who is.
Right. You know, like people like myself, I'm, you know, psychic as a brick, but a lot of people talk about these reptilian type creatures.
You know, I'll tell you what, Rick. To me, this whole thing of reptilians, it just seems very bogus to me.
Yeah,
it
me too.
It seems like something made up just to incite fear.
Mm-hmm.
And low energy, the low energy of fear, I don't go with that at all.
Yeah, I'm not really down with negativity either myself. But we do have a question in the chat room from a longtime listener and friend of the show, Teresa. She asks, so how is it that these extraterrestrials are able... hang on a second. So can we ask how the ETs disguise themselves as humans? I mean, did they go to like a plastic surgeon in Los Angeles, or how do they do that? Is it magic?
Well, the first ones who came down had been altered to look human before they came down, but now they are coming down looking human.
Okay.
They're already looking human. You know, people say that there have been impregnations by ETs, people, you know, have said that they've been abducted and impregnated. And
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah. I feel that this has been done, and I feel that actually there are space beings being born as human beings on Earth.
Okay.
So you would never know, really. You would never know. But I believe that it hasn't been a cruel thing, and on a soul level, I believe that these mothers have made an agreement, have agreed on some soul or subconscious level to be the mothers.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we have had Stan Romanek on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to be honest with
you.
He's a super guy, you know. I mean, we've had him on the show. I was very, very skeptical about his story at first. It seemed almost too wild to be believable. But after reading his book, Messages, and, you know, he's always been very, very consistent with his story. Either he is a master liar or something actually happened to him. And I'm inclined to believe that something did happen. But with these alien abductions, a lot of people, they talk about that they feel abject terror. And you also get men, too, like Antonio Villas-Boas, who was abducted from Brazil. I think it was sometime back in the 50s or 60s. He had sexual congress with one of these female aliens, and it just seems that they all say the same thing, that they are taking sperm from men, or they're impregnating women, but when they impregnate these women, their fetuses magically, not magically, but, you know, they disappear one day.
Right.
What are they trying to do with these abductions?
Nobody really knows. the full story. I mean, there are many, many races, different races, out in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there are billions of planets, probably habitable planets, and we don't know what different races are doing.
Sure.
I mean, it's been speculated that some of the races are dying and need to genetically alter their races, and we are helping them.
Mm-hmm.
And here again, I feel anyway that we, you know, have subconsciously agreed to this.
Well, now, I have heard...
No one knows the full extent of what is going on with that.
Right. Now, I have heard, though, that our government is... And, you know, other governments in the world, you know, they're kind of like in cahoots with these aliens. And from what I understand, that Eisenhower was the one that made the deal, that they give us their technology and we distribute it and come out with it very slowly over the years. And they basically offered them their fellow humans
right.
you know, to take them. Is there any truth in that? Okay.
Right. I met some of the original Stargate people, the original remote viewers, and they verified that this was true. This has happened. Mm-hmm. They have regularly done trades and exchanges, their technology, for whatever they have wanted.
Now, I'm sorry, please proceed. I do have a question concerning that, but...
This is just a funny story.
Okay.
One of the things that they have wanted and have gotten on mm-hmm. their, you know, trips to make exchanges has been peanut butter. Certain races like peanut butter.
Okay, you know what? I love peanut butter. We cannot keep peanut butter in the house. I'm not kidding you. I love peanut butter. Am I one of these beings, or that I just don't know it, or, you know? But no, I mean, it's just funny. I do love peanut butter, though. I'm like practically addicted to this stuff. But proceed, please.
I don't know. I just thought this was funny when they told me the story. But all of this is very true.
Okay.
They have been coming since the late 40s when Roswell crashed and making agreements with governments and doing exchanges. This has been happening,
But now that seems a little bit unfair. I don't think that any government, including our own, has a right to say, okay, we're going to let you go and get Rick Hale on such and such a night and take him away and do experiments on him. I mean,
I know.
Where is the taxation with representation here? That just... seems to be the antithesis of our government.
Right. But I don't think that they've always, you know, acted very much for the well-being of citizens, you know.
I know the Republicans anyways. I do have another question from the chat room, and it's an interesting one that we do like to ask people who have had contact with extraterrestrials. Have you been given any problems by our government or other governments of the world? And have you met with the sinister MIB or Men in Black?
Not that I know of, no. No, okay. I haven't. You know,
that's probably
haven't
a good thing.
Had... Yeah. It was only the one time that I know of that I met.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I haven't had any problems.
Okay. Yeah, you always hear like these really bizarre stories about, you know, these beings. They look human, but they're kind of not really human. They sort of act androidish, or they look Asian, and they have very large eyes and very smooth skin, and you know, you hear about these Men in Black, and I always think that, you know, the Men in Black legends, you know, people wearing black clothes go all the way back to, you know, when people believed in demons and the devil. Of course, people still believe in that, but it was more widespread, you know, 400 or 500 years ago. But I just it's very difficult for me to wrap my mind around that any government should have a right to take away my rights. But
we are living in extraordinary times, mm-hmm. and there is a lot going on now. The conversations that I had with Dan Fry about what the aliens told him about the role that their ancestor aliens played in the Bible, they were actually often written in the Bible as angels.
Okay.
They were such fascinating conversations. And if you go to my site, not that I'm trying to be a salesperson, but there's a lot of information in the book that would be very helpful to people to understand our point in time and to understand many of the things that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to my site, exploringsacredspace.com, and get my book, I will sign it personally for you. And I've also taken $4 off. The retail is $24. But I've got them on the site for 20 right now.
Okay.
And I'll sign them and mail them to you.
One of the people in our chat room right now is actually a gentleman that has a show here on Z-Talk, Derek White Sky Cloud. And he is the host of Between Two Worlds. He claims that he is an experiencer. You know, from what I understand, that's what abductees like to be called, experiencers. And he said that if there is any threats of live rockets being shot, that these beings will come down and make them disappear, dismantle them. Is there any truth to that?
Yes, there is truth to that. Again, from the military people that I have met who have had 28 degrees, some of them of top secret clearance above the president, spacecraft have come and hovered above nuclear facilities where they had the nuclear bombs and disabled them. If there, you know, would have been incidents where they have gone up, would have gone off like accidentally or whatever, they have been disabled. Yes, this has been very true.
Yeah, it's funny that you should say that, because a guy that I work with, he used to be a security guard. At I live in Chicago, by the way, about 30-40 miles north of the city. And out by me, we have the Zion Nuclear Power Plant. And he was telling me that sometime back in the late 80s or early 90s, that they actually had and was witnessed by many employees, as well as the night security staff, of a UFO visiting this this nuclear power plant. A lot of people say that they started visiting us when we, you know, decided to drop the atom bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Are they afraid of us, that we are capable of destroying not only ourselves but other beings out in the universe?
I wouldn't put it that way, Rick. I don't think there's fear involved. I don't think they're afraid of us,
mm-hmm.
but they don't want, for some reason, that I can't explain, if we detonate or even blow up our planet, or the nuclear bombs, the radiation goes out into space.
Right.
There is residue that affects them that they don't like. So, you know, they're trying to curb this, the use of these bombs.
Yeah. Well, you know, I remember when I was a kid, I grew up, you know, I was born in the 70s and, you know, coming up in the 80s, and it was a very, very real prospect that the USA and the USSR were going to throw a little temper tantrum and start whipping nuclear missiles at each other. I remember when I was a kid actually doing drills, you know, like nuclear bomb drills, and getting underneath our desk and, you know, basically sticking our head between our legs and kissing our butts goodbye. But and it would seem that these extraterrestrials really do have our best interest in mind.
I believe, you know, there's been talk of ones that are uncaring, and may see us more as things to experiment with,
mm-hmm.
and not so much evil, but just uncaring. But it is the opinion of many of these people who are very knowledgeable, and my opinion, that the benevolent ones far outweigh the uncaring ones.
Sure.
So we have nothing to fear there. What is coming, you know, they are very much going to be helping, the good ones are very much going to be helping with okay. what is coming.
Yeah, it just really seems, you know, because you always hear about people. It's like, you know, they were doing probes. They were, you know, taking portions of my brain. They were putting implants. Now with the implants, I know that there's been a lot of research done on that, and people have actually had implants removed from
right.
them, which to me constitutes physical evidence that there is something really going on. Why is it that they put these implants? Some people say it's so they can control us.
I don't know if they're used for tracking or, you know, we don't know exactly what they've been used for.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't have an answer for that.
Yeah.
It's very interesting, though.
Yeah, we can barely understand our own psychology. How could we possibly understand the psychology of, you know, creatures that are probably millions of years ahead of us in their,
right.
Their
one
technology?
One thing that I do want to say is that we experiencers, we who have had contact, I do believe that we have been contacted throughout our lifetimes,
mm-hmm.
and that we are being sort of followed and connected with throughout our lifetimes. And who knows? I have read some very convincing things that on some lifetimes we are extraterrestrials.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, what is that? Panspermia is a big belief with biologists that our planet was seeded.
Right,
by something.
And I believe that too. But I also believe that, you know, some lifetimes were here on Earth,
mm-hmm.
and some were on different planets.
Yeah, I've actually talked to people who have had past life regressions, and they said that they've come to, and they've had the person tell them that, you know, you were such and such a person on such and such a planet millions of light years away. So
right.
I've never had anything done like that. I'm not opposed to it, but I'm just kind of afraid that I'm going to be told that I was, you know, Jack the Ripper or H.H. Holmes in a former life, you know, some serial
no.
killer or whatever. But, you know, now, Kristen Ann, from what I understand that there is so much that we can't even begin to cover everything. I've tried to hit the bullet points, and I hope that I was successful in doing that. But from what I understand, that you're going to be coming back here sometime in January or February. We're going to talk a little bit more, correct?
Right. And if you have a cancellation anytime, you know, before then, I'm glad to come back also.
Yeah.
And I strongly suggest you go to my site and check out all the information. It's exploringsacredspace.com.
Mm-hmm.
And my email address is even there if you have questions.
Oh, fantastic. Now, do you have any other projects that, well, I mean, besides, you know, preparing for, you know, what is coming, are there any other projects that you have going on that you'd like to tell our listeners about?
I haven't begun my next book yet. I'm doing artwork, and you can see some of my artwork there. But that's about it.
Okay. Well, it's definitely been, you know, a fascinating time that we have spent with you tonight. I'm definitely very interested in this kind of thing because, like I said, my wife and I have both been told that we are people that are going to be making the transition. We've been told that we're both indigos, and we've been told that our, you know, our little boy Theo is a crystal child. Like I said before, whether or not that's true, I'm not sure. Until I actually, you know, see this transition take place, then yeah, I'm
right.
probably going to completely believe it. But that's no disrespect to you. I'm just kind of like, I'm from
it's
Montana, show me state.
It's just the natural, you know, human tendency to believe things when we see it. I mean, it's healthy to be a skeptic. So, but yeah, we are truly living in extraordinary times.
And
I think extraordinary things will be happening in our near future.
Well, we'll wait and see. You know, Kristen Ann, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Like I said, it's been a fascinating, you know, time speaking with you. And of course, we can't really hit on everything, but I can't wait till you come back. And hopefully,
yeah, I look forward to it.
Yeah, Karen will be here, and I know that Karen has a ton of questions because, unlike myself, I'm, you know, psychic as a brick. Karen is very intuitive and extremely sensitive. So,
great.
Yeah, so, I mean, she's definitely going to want to talk a little bit, you know, about this more with you. So, Kristen Ann, you know, author of Exploring Sacred Spaces, A Vast Quest, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and can't wait to have you back.
Thank you, and I look forward to it. Take care.
Outstanding. You too. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, Cheryl, may I bring you on?
You may.
Excellent. So,
hi,
yeah.
Cheryl.
Oh,
Kristen, thank you so much for coming on tonight. I was just sitting here, I was just listening. I was fascinated. I actually sent Rick a list of questions that I wrote after I read your book, which I highly recommend everybody. Please read it. but Rick covered a few of them, and we'll cover the rest next time. So I'm so glad you're going to come back.
I look forward to it.
Great.
And I'm so glad that you liked the book.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for sending a copy. I appreciate it. And I read it very quickly. I could barely put it down. So very intriguing.
Yeah. There's so much interesting information that I felt mm-hmm. people need to know.
Yeah. Yeah. And yes. And you put it in terms that really made sense to me, and so I think that's why I connected with the book. And even though, as you said earlier, you know, some people are going to look at it as maybe being far out there, outlandish, whatever you want to call it, in some ways this may sound strange, but it actually made a whole lot of sense to me. So yeah.
Well, good, I'm glad, but
thank you again, and I'll definitely we'll connect and get you back here real soon.
Sounds good. Great. Well, nice talking with you.
Nice talking with you as well, Kristen.
Okay.
And have a nice night.
You too.
You too.
Have a good night.
Thanks.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. So yes, sure. Fascinating.
Very. Awesome. You know, my brain actually hurts a little bit right now with everything I had to take in tonight.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. So what do we got coming up next week then?
We have coming up next week, December 13th, 2012, we have Frank Santariga.
Mm-hmm.
He is a UFO researcher and author of the book Paranormal Family and Friends. And so he will join us next week. Later in the month, we have Chuck Gotsky from In the Dark Investigations. And rounding out December is David Jones, lead investigator of Project Paranormal.
Yeah, it sounds like we got a really great great lineup coming for everybody.
Definitely.
So, you know, on behalf of Paranormal Underground Radio, Karen, unfortunately, who could not be here tonight, and, you know, Cheryl and Chad, you know, thanks to everybody for listening, and stick around, because next the Z-Talk Radio has Fox City's Paranormal, their show coming on next. And
their guest, you know, Rick, I don't know if you saw that in the chat room, their guest is Noah Lee from Paranormal Investigators of Milwaukee.
Oh, okay, great. Oh, thank you, because I didn't see that. So I apologize for that, guys. You know, kind of in the middle of listening how the world is going to vastly change here in our lifetime. So, yeah, stick around for Fox City's Paranormal, and, you know, everybody, thanks for listening, and have a good week.
All right, goodbye, everybody. Good show, Rick.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net, and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network. ¶¶